This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project.
Project.
Hey, Yon. Welcome back. That was the most Australian start we've ever had. Hey, Yon. Today, we are going to talk about something we missed last week, but I think is due for a good talking to.
Yeah.
And this is Matt Fraser's retirement. Now, let's talk about the history between the Mind Muscle Project and Matt Fraser.
Goes back a long way. So, Matt was first learning snatch, and we were showing him just the rings.
Yeah, so he came in, and he was like, hey, how do you do pull-ups?
How
and
do you push hard? And I said, just follow me, bro.
Teach me mental toughness.
I've actually done a workout against Matt Fraser.
You had. You beat him in the first round. I remember.
I beat him in the first round.
So, that's our history, right? So, what happened was in 2000 and... Oh, what year was it?
17. Yeah.
Matt Fraser got brought out he signed a contract before he became the CrossFit Games champion for the first time to do a tour in Australia. And this was because, like, a workshop tour.
Yeah.
Which is like, hey, you know, Matt Fraser's going to sit down and talk about his workouts and sign your Reebok shirt and that sort of thing. And we got an opportunity in that contract to lock him down for an interview, which was awesome. So I can't remember the guy who set it up for us.
Yeah. He was absolute legend. Yeah. I think he was like Brazilian.
Yeah, he's Brazilian, dark skin looking guy. Yeah, but I think he lives in Brisbane, I want to say. But he was an absolute legend. So I can't remember your name, but thank you for setting that up. That was awesome. So we got this opportunity to sit down and interview Matt and in one of his workshops. So he was at Khan Porter Gym, good friend of ours, doing the workshop. And was Khan at that event?
He came, yeah, he did. He came like super hungover.
Okay. But he didn't do the work. Oh, he did the workout.
He did like the one I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we got an opportunity. We interviewed. Oh no, because it was like they just opened their new gym.
Yeah.
So I think they had like a welcoming party.
Yeah.
So we did an interview as that welcome party was rolling in, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, and that's why Khan was so hungover.
Yeah. So I threw a bunch of questions at him that you and I always like. I think back when we were younger podcasters, we were less subtle about stirring up controversy and a bit more direct.
Yeah, I mean they actually weren't that controversial. We probably just like, you know, usually we get a good opportunity to like build some rapport with the guests beforehand, and we didn't really get that.
No,
he was a little bit just like standoffish, and we said, okay, we're gonna start, and we hadn't really said a word to him.
Yeah.
And like I think the very start of it, which if you know us now, it doesn't seem that crazy, but we actually was laughing about how short he was compared to Brett Fikowski.
Yeah,
which to me, I'm, you know, it's never serious, I'm also short.
Yeah.
But he wasn't very happy about it.
No he didn't take the joke very well.
No.
And he didn't take some other comments around politics and religion and stuff very well. But regardless, anyway, first interview went down, cancelled it because he wasn't happy with it, and then rescheduled the interview 24 hours later, the end of the workshop, which we did, and we got through it, and it was great in the end.
And he did a great job on the second one. Like, to his credit, he like retold the stories with enthusiasm, and he genuinely gave it his best.
Very much so. And look, Matt, as you know, he said it himself, he's not a guy that's ever really liked the spotlight.
I think this was early days. Like, I honestly think this
but
was
just
like,
one.
This was like his first podcast.
Yeah.
Like, he had not done, because he was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
He hadn't done many. Now he's everywhere, but he hadn't done many shows.
And over the last, you know, five championships or what, it was probably something he's gotten used to. I'm sure now he has no issues with it. And he probably has got a YouTube channel or whatever. I don't keep up with him anymore. But anyway, I think the story here is worth discussing is that obviously he eclipsed Rich Froning as the greatest CrossFit athlete of all time. And there's a whole generation of people doing CrossFit now that are, you know, looking at Matt Fraser as the GOAT. And the Rich Froning is just sort of this afterthought, which is so crazy for us because obviously, you know, this is the first sport that we really followed from the start when Rich was our GOAT.
Yeah.
You know, no one could beat Rich. And Rich did beat Matt to his credit when they faced each other. But I think it's pretty clear now that Matt is probably better than Rich.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. I think Matt is for sure the most competitive person I've ever met or seen in my life. Like, I think his competition is intense. Like, even the work I did against him, I've got the video on my phone. Like, he was like making fun of me as soon as he started beating me, right? Like, he was like, he buries people, right?
Yeah,
it's like he's, and he, you know, buried Khan the workout. Like, he's so, he refused to lose a single workout on his whole camp, right?
Yeah.
It didn't matter what was happening. And he was telling us stories of like how he would, when his first early days, he would like look up times from like the CrossFit champions and shit, and he would just like go in the gym, beat them. Didn't matter if there was time left in the AMRAP. He didn't care. Only about beating them, right?
Mm.
This is a crazy competitive guy. And it seems like with this, he's like, cool, I got more championships, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It is pretty nuts how I really think that does play into it a lot.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think that what's unique about CrossFit is that, you know, with basketball, right, when people are deciding who's the GOAT between Jordan and LeBron, in some ways, it's hard to compare because they're up against very different competition. So the stats that Jordan did in his era versus the stats that LeBron's doing in his era are in very different contexts.
Yeah.
So if you score, if you average, I don't know, 35 points a game in your, you know, career versus 35 against different competition, it's hard to compare those things. Were you as good as, was Jordan as good as LeBron, but Jordan was just versing less developed? Was he just ahead of his time? You know, was he just way better than a lot of the players he was versing? Maybe. You can't really ever get a definitive answer to that problem. Now, sorry, to that question. Now, with CrossFit, what's unique is the workouts are the same. Mm. And no one has any influence over you. Obviously, with Matt, he pushes harder in competition, but there's nothing, unless you kind of get into those field workouts where maybe you can push someone off something or whatever. If they're comparing Fran times, if they're comparing who can do a 2K row for time, if who's got the heavier snatch, you can compare them and just be like, oh, all his stats are better. He's obviously better than Rich. And that is the case with Matt Fraser. Yeah, he's just a better athlete.
His stats are better. And then I think probably what is unquestionable as well is like there's more CrossFitters now than there were when Rich Froning was winning.
Yeah.
This is more competitive now. And he wins by a bigger margin than Rich did.
Yeah.
He's cleaned the floor. Like, I don't know.
It's over.
He was just
saying, the final day.
Like, we're talking about, like, I think 1 year was pretty close. But generally, he has wiped the floor with everyone. We went to the CrossFit Games 2016. His first win, cleaned up. Right, yeah. It was over, you know, well before the first day. And Rich wasn't like that. Rich would like come back on the last day. It was wicked, and he'd win.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's pretty close. But I think though, what is different, because it's not just about how good you are, I think it's also about legacy. And definitely, I think Rich's legacy is stronger because why I think guys like us that started in the early days of CrossFit love Rich, because Rich like made CrossFit more legit, and he made fitness more legit. Like, everyone would laugh at CrossFitters, right? You had like Kristen Clever and like James OPT. Like, people were like, this is a joke, right?
Chris
not
Biller.
Saying they're not good, but they'd laugh. Like, oh, these guys aren't strong. They're like, yeah, they're pretty fit, but whatever. And then Rich came and he was different. Everyone was like, oh, dude, turns out, like, you could hear it. Like, real powerlifters like Mark Bell be like, dude, I actually think this CrossFit thing is now legitimate.
Yeah.
Have you seen this Rich Froning guy?
Yeah.
He snatches excellent technique.
Yeah.
It's like 140 kilos. He's wearing tennis shoes. And he's been working out all day, dude. And also, he looks awesome.
Yeah,
that was the other thing.
He looks good.
Perfect body, like the body everyone wanted.
Yeah,
the technique everybody wanted, and I think he had a big influence even on just. I remember those early videos, like, okay, we're doing this every minute on the minute. Like he almost invented EMOMs.
Yeah,
you know, he really introduced like how to train for fitness. Whereas I don't think Matt has done that. Like, I think he's just been the best, and he's just cleaned up.
Yeah.
Prize money put in his pocket. Whereas, you know, Rich has like genuinely put fitness on the map for the sport.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's, you know, a similar argument for, say, Michael Jordan, right? Mm. He brought basketball
to the world.
Yeah, he brought it mainstream, right? He brought the shoe. He did all this sort of stuff. Rich was the first athlete, like, signing supplement deals with BSN, like, huge company that's only ever sponsored bodybuilders. And now Rich Froning. You know, like, he really carved the path for Matt Fraser. But coming back to Matt Fraser, what was interesting, and by the way, just before we leave that point on Rich, I do think what he'll always have over Matt is he's just way more marketable. Like, the way he looks, Matt Fraser doesn't look that good, bro. He's really short, he's hairy, he's really stocky. I mean, he doesn't give a fuck, and he's listening to this and he's laughing at me. He goes, but I'm the CrossFit Games champ. But Rich, bro, people will look at Rich and
he's
like, I want to look like Rich Froning. Yeah. No, he's like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's like the ideal, because he's like average height. He's like perfect build. He's
shredded.
Not, you know, he's like shredded, but he's not too shredded.
Yeah.
He's not like a bodybuilder, right? No. He's just like, you know what? And he's also got the functional aspect. Everybody's just, I want to be like Rich.
Yeah. What was I going to say? So the thing about Matt is what took him to get good and took him to dominate, it did take him some time. Mm. So he lost to Rich 1 year. Then with Chris Spiel, with Ben Smith, he lost to Ben Smith that year, so he was in the CrossFit Games losing for a while. When Rich stepped into the CrossFit Games, he was like win.
Well, Rich's story was like perfect, right? He like lost one because he couldn't do one thing.
Yeah,
couldn't climb the rope.
Yeah,
so he lost, and then he's like, I never lost again.
Yeah, it's true. And then he retired on top, and it's similar to what Matt did. But it was interesting because if you'd watch Matt coming up, you wouldn't think he would have got as good as he would have got.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Whereas Rich just started on top, and then everyone kind of caught him. But what's crazy about Matt is that everyone was at his level. And then no one was at his level. It's like, what happened in that 2 years where, like, could he really been doing that much different? I don't know. Did he figure something out?
Yeah, that's supposed to be the most amazing thing. Is obviously, he's naturally talented, but the ability to keep progressing
so much further above everyone else.
Unbelievable. I remember when we interviewed him, he was talking about how, like, his first year, he was like, oh, you know, I won easily, but, like, I did bad in the sprint. He's like, went to the sprint coach, sprinted all year. Next year, first in the sprint. Yeah. You know, that's the shit that would happen. And yeah. Rich didn't do that. You know, Rich would struggle at swimming and he'd struggle again the next year.
Yeah.
Or he'd struggle with running, struggle again the next year, and he would make it up. But whatever he does in his training, and hopefully probably now he's retired, he'll share more of like what he does, or he's just naturally gifted. But his ability to like, yeah, just continue to get better and get better at the things that don't come natural to him has just been like phenomenal.
Yeah, and then, honestly, I checked out of CrossFit a while ago, so I haven't kept up to date with it, but I definitely think, you know, there's always opportunity, I think, with any sport. I mean, CrossFit's pretty well controlled. There's always opportunity for, like, major controversy, usually steroids or, like, some hit-and-run shit or some, I don't know, some crazy shit like that. But, you know, to Matt's credit, he didn't do any of that stuff. You know,
He had like same wife the whole time.
Yeah, played it pretty safe the whole time. Just kept to himself, did his thing. And like, I think that's good for a sport that wants to grow and be stable.
But I do think a sport like CrossFit lends itself to personalities that stay out of trouble. Like,
yeah, it's like triathletes. Sports,
yeah, it's just like you have to
look
such
at Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, that's true. But I think usually you have to have like such a disciplined lifestyle. Like you gotta be so into fitness. Whereas you maybe find like a basketball player, it's like, dude, I'm not into fitness. I just stay up late. I like to do this. I like to have fun.
Yeah.
The money's not so crazy. Yeah. Whereas, I don't know, it just seems to attract CrossFit. Yeah. Like, pretty straight and narrow personalities.
Yeah. He's not rocking up to the gym in the Lamborghini and then getting out and like training. Yeah. No, it's not. It's no Conor McGregor. It's not rolling into the CrossFit Games on a yacht. But no, it was a good era. I think that it was a good time. So I think it's definitely time for someone new.
Oh, yeah.
I
think it's great for everyone that he retired. Honestly, he's the best. And a sixth wouldn't have changed anything.
No.
So that's why it's probably smart in his
part. Yeah, yeah. I mean, as good as it is to watch, this is what happens, right? Everyone wants to see you win for a while, and then it gets to the point where you're so good, everyone wants to see you lose.
Yeah.
And then everyone wants
only about you losing.
And then everyone wants to see the comeback.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, do you really want to go through that process, or would you rather just skip that whole thing and just put someone fucking really good in? You know, that's kind of what's going on there. But anyway, interesting. We digress. I wanted to get a little bit into, I guess, some, you know, pretty crazy COVID stuff that's happening in Australia. What I find is so interesting is that we have this situation in New South Wales and Victoria, which obviously basically the same thing in many ways. Huge, massive city centres, metropolitan areas. Obviously, New South Wales was doing things really well where we are. Victoria has this like lock it all down policy. So it was an outbreak, 5-day lockdown while the Australians opens on. It just seems unnecessary, honestly. We did it a really good way in New South Wales. I don't see why they could just not copy that game plan where you just shut down certain suburbs and try and control it and contact trace. Maybe the systems aren't there. Maybe it's just... I don't know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it just seems unfair.
You know, people are so weird. People are always like, oh, you know, it's because the Premier's like, he just wants all his power. He wants to like lock people down because he's like power hungry. Like, it's obviously not that. These people just want to get re-elected.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have these like strategies that I think, yeah, often they are, don't really make much sense, but it's always to do with getting re-elected. Like, you know, they're not going to stay in power.
No.
Keep everyone locked down forever. They're trying to get re-elected. So generally, you know, what happened in Victoria, I think, was it got so bad that he's like, okay, that can never happen again. Because the oldies were not happy when, you know, all the other oldies are dying.
Yeah.
So his strategy to get re-elected is to lock down, whereas our premier strategy is to keep the businesses going, which is, you know, fantastic for us.
Yeah.
And she's gaining voter points on that. So I was doing like people so weird on social media. They're always like reading so far into it, around, like why they. I'm like, no, they're just trying to get reelected. Yeah. How can you not see this?
Yeah, yeah. Dan Andrews had some small book, had Mein Kampf on his bookshelf, and so we saw it.
Are you serious?
No. But this is the controversial YouTube videos. They'll implant it in a YouTube video. They'll be like, see, that's from Mein Kampf, and that symbol is stitched into his jacket, which means he's actually Hitler reincarnated.
When it's locked down, those politicians are working every day, 7 days a week. They don't want to do that. He wants to like go home and enjoy his wife or something. You know, he doesn't want this like crazy headache. He just wants to get reelected.
Yeah.
So he's not doing this for his own.
He's trying to keep his job. Just trying to keep his job. Anyway. It is interesting what's happening there. What is your feeling on... Now, this is unsurprisingly, we haven't actually talked really much at all about masks. And
have you seen it in America now that they're suggesting like to wear 3 masks at once?
Yeah, I haven't really seen some of that stuff. But one of our clients just got back from Melbourne and he did some training at one of the gyms, before this lockdown. And he was like, they made me wear a mask while I was training. I mean, I don't know how I feel about... If our clients had to wear masks, obviously, you know, I fear for panic, I guess, when someone isn't used to something, they start breathing really heavy. They're already you know, not the fittest person ever, and they're trying to build their fitness, and now you're restricting their breathing. Oh, it seems like a recipe for disaster. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like a very
good idea.
Unless
you're doing just weights, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cardio with a mask doesn't seem like a good idea. I think if you're very worried about COVID, then you'd be better off just trying to keep your distance and doing something outdoors.
Yeah. I just think if you're the gym owner and you're responsible for your client's health and safety, my recommendation would be, I guess what I would do in this position is to, if they have to wear masks, not do any hard conditioning sessions.
Yeah.
This, you can't really buy a mask. I was thinking, okay, what mask could you buy so that, you know, it doesn't affect your breathing? The only thing I can think of is those stupid face shields. But that's not really a mask. Have you seen the people on the trains that wear
face
shields?
Yeah, I've seen the face shields.
I'm like, I feel like a mask is safer than a face shield. The face shield is so open.
Yeah.
That, like, the germs can get underneath.
I don't even see how it works at all, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's just...
For sure.
I don't know, it's stupid. But yeah, there are some ridiculous versions of masks out there. And yeah, wearing three masks and stuff, I don't know, it seems silly to me. But yeah, I just think if you have your clients... I would never want to put one of our clients in a position where they're breathing so hard that the mask forced them to get into a panic situation. Because we used to train with that...
Yeah, the training mask.
Yeah, the training mask, that altitude simulation thing.
We're ahead of our time. We were
preparing for the pandemic. But that thing, if I did... It wasn't even hard. If I just did like 10 burpees, 10 kettlebell swings, and you're trying to suck air through the mask...
Well, honestly, that whole that training mask thing is similar to a mask. It just restricts your breathing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's harder to get air in.
I mean, even, I don't know, just, word of caution. I mean, I'm sure there's some gyms out there right now, gym owners listening to this that...
Have no choice, maybe.
Well, have no choice, but I think they're already doing it. They've probably already done that, and they've gone, oh, fuck, we can't have these people training in masks and giving them hard interval conditioning because, you know, it's not going to work out. I just can't see it being safe.
No, and it's just not required.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too much. So, I was listening to Francis Ngannou. Now, I know this is not really your area, and probably a lot of people listening to this don't know who that is. But anyway, it's this guy from the UFC, right? He's the number one contender for the heavyweight championship.
He's second best.
Essentially, yeah. He's the first in line to take the throne. And
if he wins.
Now, he has just been, like, in the past, since he's entered the UFC, like, just knocking people out cold, right? He's this huge, huge black guy from Cameroon, right? But he's Cameroon...
Is he better than Kimbo Slice?
Oh, dude, Kimbo Slice is awful. Yeah. He would murder Kimbo Slice.
Sounds like a killer.
Dude, he is the most scary man on planet Earth, right?
He's big.
Oh, he's massive. Right. Yeah, he's massive. He's
looking up a photo.
He's a gorilla, bro. He's a gorilla. Anyway, so he did fight for the belt in 2019, I want to say, but he lost, right? So he lost because he just punched himself out.
Yeah.
The other guy's deeper. He's lighter. He's faster. He's got out of the way. And this guy was, he was so tired. Like, he redlined. He actually redlined his body, and he couldn't lift his arms up, right, to fight. And so he just got tackled and pushed around. Anyway, he's in line for this fight again. He goes on Joe Rogan. Obviously, Joe Rogan has some deal now with the UFC.
Oh, he's Cameroon French.
Yeah. He has some deal now with the UFC, obviously. Joe Rogan has some deal with fight organizations. I don't know if he's getting paid, if he's just agreeing to it, doesn't care about the money, but he's hyping fights, right?
And so, stuff has changed with Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Anyway, stuff has changed. So, it's a 3.5-hour podcast on this guy's life. Where he is now in the UFC, as to where he was, where he grew up, it is actually, you could write a book on it. You could put a 10-part movie series on it. How these guys get out of their situation.
Oh my God. At 10 years old, he was working in a sand quarry because of lack of funds.
Yeah. Bro, he almost died multiple times trying to jump over fences. So they, part of like, there's this whole route that you take, this just really underground system of how you get out of Cameroon, because it's like super dodgy, right? Trying to get out of Africa and make it over to the US. And so you're like selling all the stuff off and you're paying people off. And, you know, there's this like special bus that you take. And if the bus breaks down, everyone on it dies because it's too hot and too cold at night. And so, like, you just hope the bus. Anyway, it's a crazy story. But
he only started at 22.
Dude, I'm telling you, the fact this guy's alive is just a straight miracle. And one of the things, he has to like cross the border to Morocco. And it's got heaps of patrol, right? But in this, in this border, they've got heaps of barbed wire, but you can't really see it at night when they're trying to cross. And in one of I think it was like his first or his second attempt, bro, he falls head first into all this barbed wire. And he's like trying to get out of it, and he's fallen into it, and he's like trying to pull it off him. And he says he comes back to the forest and he's just like shredded in barbed, like whole body cut up, hands, feet, everything, because he's fallen into it and he's like trying to climb out of it, barbed wire. Now, the problem is when you got into the forest, right? It's just crazy telling this story because this guy's like fighting the UFC, right? You go into the forest, you can't go to the hospital because if you go to the hospital, they've gone, okay, all the hospitals look out for people who have injured themselves on barbed wire because we need to arrest them. So he can't like go to the hospital. So he like, ends up having to go because he's going to die in the forest. He's going to like bleed to death.
Yeah.
And he gets stitches and stuff. Like halfway through getting stitched, he like gets arrested and stuff and he gets kicked back out. So they're constantly trying to make this border crossing. And so they end up trying to go by sea in the ocean, right? You know what the sea craft is, bro? One of the things you find in a pool. Like a blow up. He's like blowing it up with his mouth. He's trying to cross like the ocean.
Which ocean is he trying to cross?
I think he's like...
From North Africa to Europe, right?
No, I don't think he's trying to cross that. I think he's trying to cross a border. I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain because English isn't that great.
Yeah.
But he's trying to go...
He speaks French, right?
Yeah. No, and that's what I was going to say as well. It's like this guy obviously can speak Cameroonian. Mm. He can speak French and he can speak English. Mm. Right? And he can knock people out cold. This guy is super talented, super gifted, but he's telling these stories of him. So he starts, because obviously there's all these different stories put together, and Joe stops him and he's like, every time you tell me this, like, I can't believe you made it out alive. And he, you know what he says? He goes, when I tell these stories, he goes, I actually don't think it's my life. He goes, it's actually that crazy. Because there's so many, like if you had to fall into barbed wire and then run back to a forest and then go to a foreign hospital and get stitched up, to even get one of those stories in your whole
life.
That's
your lifetime
story.
That's
like your crazy story, right? And he's got all of them put together back to back to back to back and so many more. And so the fact that he's really just sitting there on the biggest podcast in the world telling this story is just absolutely crazy. So like every year, he'll go back to Cameroon with his family because he was saying like, if I die out in the ocean in this little dinghy thing, right? They'll never know what happened to me. They'll never find my body. They'll never know because there's no communication. He doesn't have a phone. Yeah. He doesn't have a bank account.
Like, and no one cares probably.
Yeah, just the clothes on his back. This must happen to people like that all the time that want to make it out. And he goes back to Cameroon, obviously in between fights or whatever with his family. And he sits there and he's obviously in his home, his family home. And he says that he thinks about his life in the US. He thinks that he's going to get on a plane and fly back to the US and live in his US home. And he just goes, it just doesn't feel real. Like, that's how crazy his life is. That even though it is what it is today, it still doesn't feel like it's his life to him. He's just, mate, he's playing on house money right now. Mm. He thinks, for him, it's all gravy. Whether he wins a championship or not, obviously he wants to be the best in the world, but man, he's just in there. He's just having the best time ever. Imagine not having a bank account and, like, all you have is just a bunch of cash on you and, like, the clothes on your back.
Yeah, well, he was homeless in France when he got there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And what's crazy as well is I didn't realize that you could... obviously, he's gifted, but he started fighting very late.
Very late.
Like, he's 22, and really, he's, like, 26 when he took it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, and what he was saying was interesting is because, like, I don't know if people know much about boxing and MMA, but because there's so much politics in boxing, and it's, like, who you know, it takes a lot longer. And so, even though he liked boxing more, he just saw a faster path to money and, like, success in MMA. So, that's why he chose MMA. But MMA was illegal in France for a long time. Wow. So, they had, like, all these weird rules. So, dude, his first UFC fight, he didn't even know the rules.
Well, yeah. It's pretty obvious though, right?
Yeah. Well, there are...
there's a whole thing at UFC, no rules.
Well, no, I know there's actually some rules, but, no, there's actually a lot of rules. And anyway, but he's just sort of said to himself, all right, just go in there and knock him out.
Yeah.
And don't have to worry about the rules, which is kind of true. But yeah, I mean, you just hear some of these athletes and their story, you know, and I guess it's always been happening for a long time. But because you get a platform where you can talk for 3.5 hours and fucking 100 million people listen, it's never really been the case, you know? Or they make a Netflix documentary
you never hear
about
it from
you them. After the fact, yeah. So that's what is so exciting now about the world, the new media and world and stuff that we're doing is, you get the story from the source as it's happening. Like, it's pretty, I reckon it's pretty cool. I mean, imagine our parents when they got their sporting heroes or whoever they want to know about. Like, they're not going to hear from them until after retirement, until some documentary is made about them, or they write a book, right? But now you can get it as it's happening.
Yeah, it's way more exciting.
Yeah.
It's way, back then, they'd be like, dude, did you know, like, that old champion actually grew up, like, really poor?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, yeah, normally you just get, like, the 12 seconds after a match. How after, they're like, oh, dude, that fight was great. Anyway, did I tell you about my childhood?
Yeah. Everyone sit down. We're gonna need some time. So, yeah, I think it's just... Really, it's just super cool that we get an opportunity now, like, to add so many layers to the personality and the fighters or the athlete, whatever sport, they can add so many aspects to their own personality and their own voice, and they can express their opinions for good and for bad, you know? So it is a very interesting time where it's all going. But
surely it brings generally more money into sport as well.
Yeah.
Because it makes them so much more marketable. They're not just a player and like, that's it, right?
Yeah,
you see them everywhere. You see them on podcasts. So, overall, you'd assume, it's going to grow the industry of sports.
Well, now they can, you know, in their spare time playing video games, if they have a big enough audience, they can leverage that audience to make money.
Yeah.
People can pay them to watch them play video games. Like, I think it's a really good thing. What's interesting is it can be a bad thing. Did you see Tom Brady walking out of his Super Bowl
celebrations? No.
Oh, my. He was blind. Like, actually couldn't stand up. It's hilarious. I love it. I love it because it's like, he's just a human, right? He's got 7 rings. He's not like this saint where he goes home and he's like, all right, cool, training for next season. He's like, nah. I got 7 fucking rings. I'm going to party. And he was like falling over. How much money did he make from that season? Do we know?
Well, the thing about Tom Brady is like I think he's worth like $300 million, but his wife is worth like more than double that.
Why?
She's a supermodel.
She's worth more than Tom Brady?
Yeah, more than double.
How's that possible?
Because she's a supermodel.
Oh, surely supermodels don't earn more than the greatest NFL athlete of all time. No way. Yep. How is that possible? Oh, here we go. Tom Brady's final earnings in 2020, $30 million.
Yeah, look up his wife. She's got more than double as many Instagram followers as he does.
No, but that surely is not. That doesn't mean she's going to earn double what he earns. I'm telling
you, she does.
What is her name? Supermodel, Giselle.
Yeah, she makes 45. He makes 27.
$45 million a year. Oh, my God. How? How is that possible?
She looks good.
Yeah, but... Oh, my God. That's crazy. She was the highest paid model in the world from 2002 to 2017. Oh, okay. So she's like
the model. Yeah. But he is the football player.
That's fair.
Also, actually, Tom Brady, when he was at the Patriots, was like, he was much lower paid than he should be. Because Mike Gwenango talked about this. Like, all quarterbacks for like over a decade make less money than they should because he allowed himself to go on a much lower salary. He's like, hey, guys, I don't care about money. My wife is like biggest supermodel in the world. Pay me less and we'll have a bigger salary cap and we'll win more premierships. So that is like part of the reason they were able to win so many championships was he's the biggest number on the payroll, right? He would take like crazy pay cut and then they'd just be able to spend that on other players. That gets you a lot of other good players, right? And that's how they help win because he had this sugar mama. I think he needs it.
How did Tom Brady make all his money? Oh, he's got sugar mama. That's hilarious. Tom Brady, here we go. Brady made roughly $235 million over 20 seasons with the Patriots, averaging $11.75 million a year. Yeah, I mean, it's good, but it's not crazy.
No, but I think that's the thing people forget, which is like sports is huge, but the money in it is still not like other industries.
Yeah.
You know, he's like the highest paid football player and he's like getting dwarfed by his wife, his highest paid model because...
Yeah.
Things outside sport are still bigger.
Well, a lot of those deals that you see, like, oh my God, this guy signs $300 million deal. It's only a certain amount of it paid now, and then it's the rest of it's paid over a 10-year contract. Yeah,
it's huge.
And you don't always see out those contracts. You don't always make all that money. So the money that they really want is how much is guaranteed.
Yeah.
That's what they're really after. Because, yeah, so much can go wrong. You can go into the first game and roll your ankle. Yeah, and that's it. Done. You know, so yeah, I guess you just have to... All right.
There was that... I don't know if you've seen that stat, but it's like, I think... The whole sports market in America is less than the cardboard box market in America.
No way.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Other industries are bigger. I mean, it makes sense. There's a lot of cardboard boxes in sports.
They're not very expensive.
Okay. So, before we jump into that, while Raph pulls out this stat, the best men's athleisure wear on the market, I'll let you guys have one guess. Exactly right, Jen. Yeah. Look, here's the thing. You've got Lululemon. You've got Nike, you've got Adidas, you've got Gymshark, you've got... I think that's pretty much it. Those are the major players when it comes to athleisure wear. That's not a lot of players in the game, if we're going to be fair. Not a lot of players. Oh, you've got Under Armour as well. That's also in there. Now, how many of those brands are purely men's brands? I'll let you have a guess. Exactly none. So, there is room in the market for a really good... men's focused company that is also doing women's, of course, just like in the same way that, you know, Lululemon is a women's brand that does some men's, Rekgen is a men's brand that does some women's, but the focus and what they've really cut their teeth on for a long time is they've been a men's streetwear brand, they've been men's fashion wear. So if you're a guy and you're listening to this and you want to look better in the gym, if you want to wear stuff that obviously looks really good and people don't make fun of you because you're wearing, like, they're not laughing at you behind your back because you're wearing, you know, fluoro Reebok CrossFit game shorts. You want something that's just like subtle and it works well. And this stuff that I wear out on the weekends casually as well because it just looks so nice. But you also want stuff that doesn't stink. It's got really good technology in it. I mean, these guys have sourced clothing technology from all across the world, from like Korea to Italy to Germany, and they've combined it into their clothes. And that stuff takes decades to figure out. And that's why their clothes are so good. That's why they're worth the money that they're worth. And we're putting all of our creature clients in it. We're putting all of our locker room clients in it. And we put it ourselves in it every single day. I throw on minimum one item of RecGen gear every single day. I know Raph's the same. You guys can check it out.
Minimum. That's socks, shorts, shirt.
Yeah. Some days it's head to toe.
Yeah.
So you guys can check it out at the mindmuscleproject.com/recgen. You'll get a 15% discount with the code there. That's, again, the mindmuscleproject.com/recgen. And they are restocking all the popular sizes and they are launching new stuff very shortly. So follow them on Instagram as well. You can check that out at recgen. That's RECGEN. Okay. First listener question.
All right. We got.
Wait, did you get the cardboard box stat?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We got combined revenue of every US pro athletic league. So NFL, NBA, NHL, UFC, the soccer, the PGA, and all the other small ones is about equal in size to the cardboard box industry.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there are a lot of cardboard boxes.
I know. But, I mean, it's just a funny stat. It's just a funny stat.
It's just like, you know, it's in the media.
Yeah.
All right. First one we got is actually from a partner of ours, Andy Mant. What tips do you have for better sleep?
That is a good one. Buy blue blocks. Was that supposed to be an ad?
Man, no, he actually asked the question.
Oh, does he want? He maybe struggling.
Yeah, it's actually is a good question, man. The reason we talk about this so much recently with clients is because people started wearing the Whoop, so they're just naturally the next question. Like, oh, I didn't know my sleep's not great. Like, what can I do to improve sleep? And it's one of the best levers I find with a client as well, because, I mean, often it doesn't really cost anything. Let's maybe buying some glasses, but it's not like a big cost. You don't have to like hire a coach or anything or new food. You're obviously going to sleep anyway. And it's like generally a pretty easy sell.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, you're going to feel better.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is because I've been going through a stint of not great sleep. In fact, pretty horrendous for the first time I can remember in my like adult life is that, you know, I guess the compounding effects of work and stress and, you know, just stuff to get done and, you know, you're trying to be social and you're trying to do a lot as you get into, you know, the middle of your life. Sleep is something that, you know, gets pulled away from you very quickly, as you know, as well with kids. Yeah. And so actually it's like, okay, now it's time to put into practice some of the stuff that I've been learning about and actually seeing what works.
And don't you think that, I think it's fascinating about sleep, is sleep like really comes in rhythms. Like you have a good run.
Yeah.
And then you can go through a bad run. And it's hard to turn around. It's not like, oh, you just go to bed early that night. You can go on a few months where you're like, man, I'm really struggling with my sleep.
Yeah, definitely. And that months can turn into years for some people if they don't get on top of it. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I talked about, oh, the sleep's not going so well. And it's not that I don't know what to do.
No, I mean, you've read all the books.
Exactly. I've read all the books. I've had all the podcasts. I know exactly what to do. Now, what it is, it's just like nutrition. It's like, okay, don't try it all at once. What I have to do is go, okay, I'm doing these five core things or whatever. Okay, say I've got the room blacked out. I've got the blue light glasses on every night. I'm taking the magnesium. I've got the room cool. And okay, so what is it going to be? What am I missing here that is going to make a potential difference? And so it's about trying one thing at a time, because if you try seven things on the first night and you fall asleep, you're not going to know what did the trick. And so really, it's an individualized situation about what's making it work. And so for me, I used the tip that you had, Raph, which was don't go to bed until you're really tired and then progressively work your bedtime back from there. And so that's what I did. First couple of nights, I just stayed up really, really late. So I stayed up I think I was like 12:30, 1 o'clock until I was like actually tired, went to bed, fell asleep pretty much straight away, which is great. Way better than tossing and turning till, you know, going to bed at 8 and tossing and turning till 12. That's just a horrible feeling. So I did that and then eventually got that time down to like 11 o'clock, 10:30. And so now instead of staying awake in bed for ages, which is a very frustrating feeling, and I feel like just helps you not go to sleep when you're just sitting there going, I should be asleep, I should be asleep, I should be asleep. It's awful, right? I just slowly worked back that time that I was tired. So only go to bed when you're really tired. And eventually I tried to get that time back. All right, let's see if I can go to bed 20 minutes earlier than I did last night, 20 minutes earlier than that night. And eventually I got it down to about 10:30. And that seemed to work really well for me. I think what was happening, I was just going to bed when I wasn't ready to go to bed. And as a result, mentally, I fucked myself.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a good quote in one of our previous shows we had, which was the guy we had on, he was saying like, sleep is like a train. He's like, it goes when it's time. It's not something you can be like, oh, I'll just like jump on this train 4 hours early. Cool, you're going to sit there until it's time for it to go.
And
sleep is about like that. And I think that, you know, sleep is something, if you look at your training, your health, you should always be working on your sleep efficiency until you've got it pretty good.
Yeah.
So when it's pretty good, awesome, you can leave it. But it's something that you always want to work on. I don't think you just want to be in bed for longer and not fix the root cause of the problem, right? Yeah. So inefficient. And at some point, your life's not going to have time for it, or you could just spend your time doing something better. So it's something that, yeah, I think that you always want to work on. It's pretty easy to test your sleep efficiency. You can have a week, or you can have any tracker, and you'll get some idea of a good night versus a bad night. Yeah, and like what I find is that, like, you know, sleep efficiency is one of the first things to go when your sleep, when your life starts to maybe take a bit of a change. So you got like, a new pressure in your life, or a new like kind of social outlet that you're doing, or like your diet's gone off track. Like very often you see one of the first things that gets worse is your sleep efficiency, you know, things are a bit more hectic. So it's like a really good indicator. So like, oh no, I try and stay on top of that. It's going to keep things pretty in order.
Yeah. And then a couple of other things I did to help was I did actually, it's not an ad, I did put the blue light blockers earlier on earlier, because what was happening was because when the sun sets in summer and when I like to go to bed, which was around like 9:30, there's only an hour in there where it's dark. And so I was like, always had the rule. I'm like, oh, so I don't want it's dark. But that's so close to
almost
bedtime.
9 o'clock.
Yeah. So basically what I was just like, all right, cool. The rule is like, as soon as you get home, you just put them on at like 7, even if it's bright outside, if you're not going back out and just put on early, that seemed to help as well. And then the other thing was I used to have a cutoff rule for caffeine at midday. And then I did for a few nights push it back to like 9 o'clock. So I was stopping caffeine even 3 hours before that. So it was definitely all out of my system. But I've kind of let that slip a little bit. It doesn't seem to be affecting the sleep too much.
I find with the caffeine is when my sleep is not good, late caffeine affects it. But if my sleep's on a really good path, I can have caffeine later and it really doesn't affect it. Like I can see it on my scores and everything. Cause like, it's just, you know, it's in lock. One thing I've noticed with my sleep and I'm trying to get it better is you just can't start. Like, there's so much stuff in the day that can ruin your sleep. You know, getting morning sunlight, stopping your caffeine early in the day, just, like, dealing with your shit in the day so you're not still thinking about, like, the 9 things you didn't get to when you go to bed in the night. Like, really trying to get on top of that stuff so you're not still worrying about it. That stuff does need to be done in the day. It's not like you can just start your evening routine at 8 p.m. and think it's all good.
Mm.
Like, a good day sets up a good night.
Definitely.
And it's just, I don't know, it might sound bad to people, but it takes so much discipline to get good sleep. And it's like, it is a bit of a 24/7 thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It needs to be a priority.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, very clever question there, Andy.
very sneaky.
Next question, Tom Spence. Advice for a new PT entering the industry in a very small town. He's entering in Margaret River, Western Australia, which I have been before. You got great surf. And it is like, I think it's like the number one wind.
Oh, this is not part of the question. This is you commenting on Margaret
River. This is now me commenting. It ended with Western Australia.
Okay.
I've been there before. It's a mad place, but it's a very quiet place. It's like, I think, about an hour out of Perth.
Okay. And Perth's already quiet to begin with.
Oh, dude, it's much quieter than Perth.
Yeah. Look, I think this principle really applies to PT outside. It doesn't matter if you're quiet. Doesn't matter if you're rural. Doesn't matter if you're city-based. Like, you just need to be providing and over-delivering and knowing your shit and being personable and just probably the only difference is your niche might already be sort of be selected for you, or you might be pulling from less niches. So you might be pulling from, you know, retirees to maybe, I don't know, teenagers or something. Maybe that's your two markets instead of 15 or 16 different markets in the city. But regardless, you've got to go after that market and do a really good job. That remains the same.
How many people do you need as a PT? You need 30.
Yeah.
You actually don't need to be in New York to get 30 people that want to do a PT. You can be in a small town.
Yeah.
Because you just need so few people. I think the one difference, I guess, I would think is that your reputation, you probably have to take even more care of in a small town. Like in a big city, if you mess it up in one gym, you know, just move to the next gym down the road. No one's going to know who you are.
Yeah.
But in a small place like that, I think that your reputation will get around pretty quick. So you got to do a good job. Like from day one, you got to treat every client well. If you rip off a client or you do something that you shouldn't do, you're almost going to have to move cities.
Yeah. And in some ways, marketing for in-person is easier because there's only... You can probably list on your hand 5 places where 80% of the town goes, you know, and you can go to those 5 places. You can build rapport, reputation with them. You can offer the owners of those establishments, whether it's, I don't know, the bar and like the pub and like a restaurant or whatever, or like maybe, I don't know, a local pool or something. Become friends with the owner, train them for free. They'll put in a good word. They'll spread it to their staff. Like, establish that relationship with the businesses. But I was going to say probably the next thing to think about, I don't know how ambitious you are, but if you are ambitious, you need to very quickly be thinking about online, because you need to cut your teeth in person, but you're only going to scale through online. There's not a lot of opportunities, obviously, where it's much quieter towns to scale. You can't become PT manager of this big gym and then, you know, become a franchise leader and own your own franchise one day, or if that's whatever the path is, there's just less opportunity out there. So I think the big opportunity lies for PT online. So start practicing and honing your craft of delivering really good content and posting up good content, and use what you're learning with your clients as the content that you'll post up there. Be like, hey, this is a really great exercise for retirees who get hip pain. Here's a great hip flow exercise you can all do. And, you know, post that stuff up there. That way you'll kind of build that practice with online. You'll probably attract more clients, provide value for your current clients. And
you just I think you probably agree with this though. Don't you think this person should spend some time in a big city just to go and like get experience of better training? If you think about a lot of the guys, like I think Andrew Papp was similar to that. Like he spent a lot of time in Sydney, helped grow it. I just think like, yeah, if you don't have the mentors and the perspective of a big city, man, you should maybe do a year at like a really competitive gym somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. Build up a little bit of confidence between them. I mean, James Smith did the same thing, right?
He
was from a small little place in England and he kind of capped himself out. He was maxed out and he's like, I need something bigger. And he moved to Australia and I guess look what happened.
I mean, even us starting the podcast, like we started in person. And if we were in a small town, we wouldn't have been able to do 12 months of great guests.
No.
In Margaret River.
With my host, Raf.
They might have zero guests.
And my dad.
For a podcast. Zero. Yeah. Yeah, like one or two. You know, whereas we did a whole year in Sydney. And even then we tapped it out.
Yeah.
So I do think that, at some point you might need to travel. Even we traveled. Like we went to the US to help grow the show because like Sydney wasn't big enough. It still got like 8 million people or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. It's a very good point.
Okay, next one. I haven't even tried this. Anth Sotelo. Have you considered the Oura Ring compared to the Whoop?
So the Oura Ring is essentially doing the same stuff. It's monitoring your sleep. It's giving you like recovery scores and calories burn. Okay, why the Oura Ring is not as good is because it's not as practical, right? The Whoop has multiple different placements on your body. It has the ankle. It has the bicep. It has hydro sleeves. It has all these different things that you can train with, right? Because the people that wear Whoops, they train. We train. That's the thing. People who wear Oura Rings, they train. You can't grab a barbell. You can't grab a dumbbell. You can't grab a pull-up bar.
You can't do kettlebell swings with a ring.
You can't grab any implement. You can't go in the water with the ring. It's going to come off. So it's stupid from that perspective. Unless you actually plan on wearing this ring and like never exercising with it, or just, I don't know, being a runner or whatever, then it might make sense.
You can run with it.
But Whoop's way bigger than them now. And the companies with more money, generally in the startup world, they've got more resources, they've got more team, they've got more users, which means better data, better technology, faster growth. I just think it wins every single time.
Yeah, I think they started off like pretty equal, the Oura Ring and the Whoop. But I do think the Whoop, where it's pushed ahead, has been the fact that you can use it for training.
Yeah.
So Oura Ring was like killing it. Like, you know, it's got really sleep and it's got the 24/7. But then when you can't train, kind of just kills you. That's such a big part of everybody's life.
That's why, to me, it made no sense that they sponsored the UFC. I'm like, these guys throw punches every day. They take their rings off. They don't punch with rings on. That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's why I thought it was stupid.
Yeah, and also just for me, like, I mean, the sleep part of Whoop is great for me, but I get tons of enjoyment out of the training part.
Yeah.
It just would not be the same, you know?
Yeah. Some of the most enjoyment out of the training
without the training.
So we're on the strain leaderboard in the WhatsApp group talking shit. That's the most fun part.
So to me, even if they got their sleep tracking much better than Whoop, I'd probably still have a Whoop because I'm like obviously all about training. Okay, Ashley Krebert, do you boys rate carnitine for a supplement?
L-carnitine? No. It's a waste of money.
I think there's a fantastic Hodge Twins videos on
this. Not only does it taste like absolute shit, like if you've had carnitine in water, it is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I felt one day
I've tried it before.
One time I thought it was creatine, so I dumped a bunch of it in there and just swigged the water.
Dude, creatine's also disgusting.
Creatine?
Yeah.
It tastes like anything.
Nah, unflavored creatine is gross, dude.
Nah.
It's not as bad as carnitine. I'd agree.
I think carnitine is awful. We had this in my house.
We had this argument and like we're like, what's the worst tasting sup?
It's carnitine.
It was carnitine.
Yeah, carnitine.
By a fair stretch. Creatine is not fun to drink without flavor. But it's just like, I'm not enjoying this. Carnitine is like called 911.
It's awful. Carnitine, you feel like you poison yourself.
Yeah, no, it's
if you drank it and you didn't know it was a sports supplement, you would think you drank poison.
No, like that Russian dude that's trying to become president of Russia, I reckon they poisoned him with carnitine. Did you see him?
L-carnitine, the fat burner.
There's like this guy is trying to become president of Russia and he's like, anyway, they've poisoned him and now he's like back after the poison.
Yeah,
his body's all fucked up. Dude, that is how I felt, how he looks after carnitine.
Okay, so it actually doesn't work, L-carnitine. It's all marketing. I've looked into it extensively because people ask me about it all the time. Just don't waste your time. And don't look at it on a product and supplement and be like, this is the reason I'm going to buy this product or supplement.
What people buy fat burning, right?
Yeah, it's like one of the main products in fat burners. Yeah. But the research doesn't back it up. It's not. It's like maybe some slight evidence to suggest, which is just, it's just not. It's not. Don't waste time.
Yeah, yeah. So don't waste much time. Difference. Okay, last question is, Grant has got one on thoughts on the safety bar squat. I don't think we've ever talked about a safety bar squat on the show before. Have you used it before?
I have used the safety bar squat. I used it. I used actually more than the safety bar. I used the, you know, those reindeer antler things.
Yeah.
Like,
they do have a bit of a difference though between the two.
Yeah, yeah, a bit different. Yeah, yeah. But it was like basically something to help your wrist and your shoulder.
Yeah, we used to have one that was actually really popular in rugby for a while. Like, all the Wallabies would have them because you're always getting shoulder injuries. So instead of back squatting, you'd put this like reindeer, square describing it, like metal thing across your shoulders, and it has hooks. So it'd be like a bar rack.
Yeah,
so you basically rack the bar in the front and you can just hold it. So basically you just front squat with the bar sitting in the front of your body.
Yeah. Yeah, but the safety squat bar is different.
Safety squat bar is different. The main difference as well is because the weights sit lower.
Yeah, yeah.
So you
can't go as heavy on the reindeer thing.
No, you can't go as heavy on the reindeer. You can go very heavy on the safety bar squat.
Yeah,
I've done a couple of cycles with it. So you're holding your hands out in front like a front squat.
Yeah.
Except it takes like almost no shoulder
mobility.
But it's
sitting on your back.
The weight is on your back and it's often got padding. But your hands are a bit more like a front squat. It feels much more like a back squat. But what people don't realize is because the weights sit lower compared to where they normally are, that changes the lift a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say that is easier on your back.
Okay.
Easier on your lower back when they when the weights get lower like that. And that's actually why Kabuki Strength have a lot of bars where the weight sits lower like that. And it's actually the same with bench press as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So it says easier on the shoulders for bench press if the weights sit lower. So rather than a flat bar, they're like, hey, there's no reason for a bar to be flat. We're not doing snatch and clean and jerk, right?
Yeah. Straight.
Yeah, there's no reason for a straight bar. Actually, a really good point. There is no magical reason to always have the bar straight.
It just stores better.
Yeah, it's true.
Looks better and stores better.
Yeah, and you can use it for everything, I guess. But yeah, when the weight sits low like that, it's generally, that's why people use it so much when they're older, when they're coming back from injuries. And I did find it was pretty good. It just takes quite a bit of getting used to. Don't expect to hit PRs on it as well. But if you're doing like, more hip dominant squats, like box squats and stuff, it's awesome to mix it up if you're lucky enough to have one.
Yeah, I think it's a great tool and I would definitely recommend people have it in their arsenal, especially if you offer, I guess, more personalized training sessions.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
That's it.
Nice. All right, so before we jump into our Netflix review, well, it's actually not Netflix, but regardless, he mentioned it before. Andy Mann asked the first question from Blue Blocks, the founder. Andy is basically, he's built an incredible company in such a short period of time. If, and very likely, you spend 10 plus hours or 5-6 plus hours in front of a screen, you are going to be suffering from the damaging effects of artificial light. And the only way you can offset that, quite honestly, is to turn all your screens off. Not going to happen. Wear protection, right? Just like when you go to the beach and you want to lie in the sun, you wear fucking sunblock, right? Sun's good in small doses, but, you know, if you're going to lie out there all day, you're going to burn yourself. Just like, you know, screens are fine, but if you're going to spend 5, 6, 7, 10 hours in front of them, you're going to need some protection. The best way to do that in the day is with their daylight blue light blocking glasses. And at night, when you're trying to prep for sleep, which I just talked about, is wear the nighttime ones. Now, you guys can pick up a 15% discount with our code at themymuscleproject.com/blueblocks, BLUBLOX. So that's BLUBLOX, Blue Blocks. So our website /blueblocks is where you guys can pick up that discount. Okay, so I wanted to watch the Tiger Woods documentary, so I ended up downloading this thing called Binge. Binge is the new streaming service from Foxtel. Turns out it's got all the HBO stuff on it. HBO make really good shows. So they just made a new show called The Flight Attendant, which is black comedy, and it got nominated for a Golden Globe. If you know the show The Big Bang Theory, which I've never watched an
episode
of.
When you said black comedy, I thought you meant like black people comedy.
No, dark comedy. Right. Yeah, yeah. So The Big Bang Theory is a really shit show. I would not recommend watching it. I've never watched an episode in my life, so I think it's an awful waste of time. I never completed a show in my life. But anyway, the girl from it, the hot chick, the blonde chick, the show, The Flight Attendant is with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's good. Like, I can see why I got nominated for a Golden Globe. What I really appreciate about this show is that, and I like this about a lot of different shows and movies when they can pull it off, is they use different filming and camera styles where they're like, it just has a different feel to it, you know, than the standard conventional camera shots that every show uses. And they're piecing together lots of different stuff. What's also good about it, and what I like as well about certain shows, is when the setting changes up a lot. you know, and because it's a flight attendant, they've like, they've got Rome, so, you know, there's, you get shots of Italy, oh, if it is Italy.
You have expensive taste, bro. They're just trying to film this fucking show. You're like, I like, you know, I like a bit of Rome, I like back down in New Zealand. Like, I
do, bro.
Sake, bro.
I got expensive
they're
taste.
They're in the middle of a pandemic. You're like, nah, this is my taste.
Well, it's true. This is my taste.
Fuck.
But yeah, it was a really good show. I think they got good actors. They spent good money on it. They had a pretty good plot. They had some twists and turns. Got a little bit confusing there. That was probably only.
Is it a series?
Yeah, it's like 10. You will never get through it. Don't even start it. Don't even bother. You will not even finish the first episode. But if you're normal and you actually like good TV like I do, it feels like a good little miniseries. Like, it's not going to be season 2, 3, 4, 5. It's going to be one season, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. So I'd recommend, yeah, if you're bored and you need something that's good and it's a bit more high in production and it's got some good actors and stuff, and it's, you're not taking a gamble here, you're going to definitely enjoy The Flight Attendant. If you don't enjoy it, I'd love to hear why. Shoot me a message if you didn't enjoy it.
All right, I've got a show I'm going to review. You can have a guess at this show. It broke the record for the most, it's been the longest in Netflix top 10 most watched shows, right? It was 62 days, which is longer than Avatar. Longer than Tiger King, which is the next top.
Is it out of? It's out of the top 10 now.
It's now out of the top 10, but it lasted 62 days there, which is the longest of any show.
Can I ask a follow up question? What month did it fall out of the top 10? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. Okay.
It's a show, not a movie.
No, it's got like a few episodes, and they're going for a series two, season two soon.
Oh, okay, so it's not explained. I was going to say explained. No. Explained would have been up there for a bit. Oh man, that's not Tiger King.
No,
you said.
We haven't reviewed it.
We haven't reviewed it,
and I've been watching a lot of it, which is why I'm going to review.
Oh,
it
is
now.
This the money one?
No, it is Coco Melon, the baby show. It's true. It's gone absolutely nuts. So it's like the number one baby show on Netflix. It's got 100 billion views.
Oh my god, that's because it's on the
massive
repeat, bro.
It's so good, and anytime I watch like. Sometimes I'll see like a video, like my partner will send me a video of like someone, you know, doing some baby thing. So often in the background, I see Coco Melon on, right?
I'm going to see what this shit is.
So addictive. Like if you go on to when you watch the first episode, I can tell you right now, I can sing you the whole song, every single word without even, not even missing a beat.
Go on.
Okay, the first song is called Today is the First Day of School. I'm telling you, I can, every lyric.
I'm going to get
to
that.
No one's going to enjoy it, but.
Oh no, wait, this is.
Nah, that's not it. So anyway, I had my first ever drop off to school today with Ziggy, and I sang him the song 3 or 4 times.
Is it the song?
Easily. That's the intro into the show, and then the song is going to start.
Oh my god, you know it so well. Wait, so it's just this one song?
It starts off
over
like,
again.
Today is the day, it's...
The pizza song?
Nah, you've gone to the next, like, it's not the first episode.
Oh my god.
That song is actually pretty good, that's also that's one of the classics.
All right, before we absolutely lose our entire audience, what are you gonna rate?
It's like, it's crazy. I don't know how they do it, but however they've created this show, if you like put this in front of any baby, they stop whatever they're doing and they watch. Right, it's like uncontrollable. Like they can be like crazy crying, everything.
Yeah, right.
Put in front of this, they're just gone, mesmerized by the show.
Oh, it's amazing.
So it's easily a 5 out of 5.
So it's like
there's a few bad songs in there, like Baba Black Sheep sucks. It's like. No, it's like every time that one comes on, I skip it. But like the first song, if you go to the first episode, Today is Today's First Day of School, is like all-time classic. And just for like how useful, I'll watch it 3 or 4 times a day, most days.
Wait, how long is the episode?
It's an hour. And then,
my God, you watch 4 hours of that each day?
No, I don't get through the whole thing. Like, I'll flick through my favorite songs. You know, because I'll pull out anytime. And I'll pull it out in the middle of the night sometimes.
We know you have strange taste. So what do other grown adults say about Coco Melon? Does it absolutely drive them insane?
No, I really think like even adults enjoy it.
Okay, listen, adults out there listening to this, if you enjoy Coco Melon and you know what it is, please back Raph on this, because I have to know.
Message us in. Tell us if it's enjoyable. But if you just try it, even if you just see a kid on the street, just try getting out your phone, put it on Netflix, put on Coco Melon, chuck it in front of them, see what happens. Mesmerized.
Interesting. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, back to the serious stuff. Guys, we have Project Strong on 30% discount till the end of Feb. You can pick it up at mymuscleproject.com/strong. The 8-week program in the app, exercise videos, demonstrations, program, logging scores, community messages, everything. Strong 30 is the code you want to use when you get there for 30% off. That's strong 330, and that's one word. So check it out, mymuscleproject.com/strong. Thanks so much, guys, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can
can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.